ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் shaivam.org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் நியமா, சந்தோஷ அண்ட் தனா, பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Good morning, everyone. Happy to have some special guests with us this morning. Special welcome to all of you. The talk this morning is a continuation of our series on good conduct, developing some 25 to 30 lessons on good conduct based upon Gurudeva's presentation of the yamas and the niyamas, the 20 principles that comprise the Hindu code of conduct. And we're developing these for use out in the field, not just to store on our computers, but we have live people out there wanting them, and we have some classes going on at the Hindu Center in Singapore that are using this material, as well as we have a number of our younger members in Malaysia are starting their own classes, teaching Gurudeva's Master Course Trilogy, and they'll be using this material as well. So, today's lesson is on remorse, hri, which is the first niyama, and which is to allow yourself the expression of remorse, being modest and showing shame for misdeeds. Recognize your errors, confess, and make amends. Sincerely apologize to those hurt by your words or deeds. Resolve all contention before sleep. Seek out and correct your faults and bad habits. Welcome correction as a means to bettering yourself. Do not boast. Shun pride and pretension. Let's look at some examples illustrating the practice of this niyama. First example. A husband and a wife have a disagreement at breakfast that is not resolved. The husband thinks about it during the day and concludes that the disagreement was his fault. He buys some flowers for his wife on the way home, and first thing on greeting her apologizes for the disagreement, stating it was his fault, gives her the flowers. Happy ending. Second example. Husband and wife have been arguing regularly for years and never resolve their differences before sleep. One day a friend tells them about the practice of resolving all contention before sleep and how it has improved his marriage. They start the practice and find that after a year they are arguing much less. Third example. A music teacher compliments a student on how well she sang the song today. The student thanks the teacher for the compliment and adds that she only did that well because she has such an excellent teacher. Fourth example. A teenage boy shoplifts a book from a bookstore just for the excitement of it. Afterwards, he feels bad about his action, takes the book back to the store, apologizes to the owner and promises not to shoplift again. All of the niyamas focus on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of hri, remorse, the divine quality we are expressing is admitting when we have made a mistake, pledging to ourselves to improve our behavior, and rectifying the situation with the other people involved. Hri also includes having a self-image that is humble and self-effacing. Here's a story to further illustrate hri. A few years ago, there was an incident in the news. A woman's son had been murdered, and in revenge, the woman killed her son's murderer. In sentencing the woman, the judge made the point that throughout the trial, she had shown no remorse whatsoever for the action. Therefore, he was giving her the maximum sentence he could. Another story comes from our recent visit to our local county jail, the Kauai Community Correctional Facility, as part of the island-wide Vision Group. The purpose of our group's visit was to learn more about the special efforts the warden and his staff are making to rehabilitate the inmates. The warden made a number of interesting statements. One of them was that those in the correctional center will definitely repeat the crimes that put them there unless they have a strong sense of remorse. The Tirukkural in its chapter 102, Possession of Modesty, echoes this perspective in verse 10-12. Food, clothing, and such do not differ much among people. What distinguishes good men from others is modesty. The chapter states that those who live in shamelessness will destroy everything that is good, while great men would not breach modesty even to acquire the world. The Quran describes the height of modesty in verse 10-15. The world decrees that men who are as ashamed by others' disgrace as by their own are modesty's fondest home. Hri is regret that one has done things against the Dharma or against conscience. True conscience is of the soul, an impulse rushing through a mind that has been impregnated with the knowledge that is found in these yamas and niyamas, restraints and practices. When the true knowledge of karma is understood, reincarnation, samsara, and Vedic Dharma, then true remorse is felt, which is a corrective mechanism of the soul. This remorse immediately imprints upon the lower mind the right knowledge of Dharma, how, where, and why the person is strayed, and the methodology of getting quickly and happily back to the path and proceeding onward. A simple way to show remorse is to apologize, to say with sincerity, "I'm sorry." When apologizing, explain to the person you hurt or wronged how you have realized that there was a better way and ask for his or her forgiveness. If the person is too proud or arrogant to forgive, you have done your part and can go on your way. There is another way to show remorse for misdeeds. This is by performing seva, religious service, for persons you have wronged. Give them gifts, cook them food. Some people are unreachable by words, too remote for an apology, which might even lead to an argument, and then the wrong would perpetuate itself. Sincere expressions of remorse show repentance, show that you have reconsidered your actions and found that they need improvement. And this improvement is shown by your actions now and into the future. The business and burdens of life have the ability to delay feeling remorseful for our mistakes. When these burdens are set aside during worship or meditation, remorse for past actions can burst forth. And if we are going through particularly difficult times for remorse to express itself, we need to intensify our religious practices through a pilgrimage or a few days on a religious retreat. Even though we have followed the guidelines of Hri and have admitted that we have made a mistake, pledged to ourselves to improve our behavior, and rectified the situation with the other people involved, we can still feel burdened by the mistake we made. The most effective practice for eliminating this sense of burden is the practice called Vasana Daha Tantra, writing down memories and burning them in a fire to release the emotion from the deep subconscious mind. If we continue to constantly remember the past and relive the emotions connected with it, our Vasana Daha Tantra practice is not complete. Keep doing it until you no longer constantly think of these events. Gurudeva describes those who have successfully done this as free from the past, remember the future, and move the forces of all three worlds for a better life for themselves and for all mankind. In summarizing this aspect of Hri, it is in fact this process of misdeeds against Dharma, followed by shame and remorse as people interrelate with one another, that moves them forward in their evolution toward their ultimate goal of mukti. Clearly, Hri is an important practice to master, as the better we are at it, the faster our spiritual progress. Let's look now at another aspect of Hri, which is a self-image that is modest, free of pride, of the sense that I am the best. Pride comes from our instinctive intellectual nature. The sense of modesty is in itself an expression of our soul nature. It is a self-effacing humility that attributes success to gods, gods, and guru, rather than to the fact that I am the best. It is a humility that attributes true knowledge to the soul and not our intellect. Even though today's world is filled with role models that are arrogant and unremorseful, we need to be courageous and manifest modesty in our life. Let us strive to achieve the lofty perspective so beautifully stated in the Quran. The world decrees that men who are as ashamed by others' disgrace as by their own are modesty's fondest home. In conclusion, allow yourself the expression of remorse, being modest and showing shame for misdeeds. Recognize your errors, confess and make amends. Sincerely apologize to those hurt by your words or deeds. Resolve all contention before sleep. Seek out and correct your faults and bad habits. Welcome correction as a means to bettering yourself. Do not boast. Shun pride and pretension. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you. Continuing today on our yamas and niyamas. Today's lesson on good conduct is on the second niyama of santosha, which is to nurture contentment, seeking joy and serenity in life. Be happy, smile and uplift others. Live in constant gratitude for your health, your friends and your belongings. Don't complain about what you don't possess. Identify with the eternal you rather than mind, body, or emotions. Keep the mountaintop view that life is an opportunity for spiritual progress. Live in the eternal now. Let's look at some examples illustrating the practice of this niyama. First example. A man is passed over at work for a promotion that he thought was a certainty. His first reaction is to feel discouraged and sad, but after a few days he pulls himself out of his mood by the decision to accept his current employment circumstances and be happy within them, but also to continue to strive for the desired promotion. Second example. A wife feels the apartment they live in is too small, complains to her husband about this, and expresses her discontent. The husband responds in a kindly and supportive way to her suggestion. His response changes the wife's mood to one of being grateful for having such a kind husband, and her mood of discontent is replaced by one of contentment. Third example. An attorney spent his day doing difficult research on a technical legal issue. He finds his intellect is overstimulated as a result, and he is feeling somewhat disturbed. On the way home, he stops at a park and takes a walk and observes the natural beauty of the place. This quiets his intellect down, and he is at peace with himself again. Fourth example. A teenage boy tells a lie about where he went this afternoon to his mother. Afterwards, he finds his mind is agitated as a result. He then tells his mother the truth, and as a result, soon finds himself peaceful again on the inside. All of the niyamas focus on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of santosha, contentment, the divine quality we are expressing is to be joyful and serene on the inside, no matter what events are happening in life on the outside. Here's a story to further illustrate santosha. If you have ever visited India, you may have noticed this too. When traveling in the countryside in the villages of India, you come across a family traveling together in a bullock cart with only a few belongings. They are obviously quite poor. However, they are also quite happy, smiling and joking, obviously experiencing contentment. Their beliefs are such that the fact that they are poor isn't preventing them from being content. The two Quran in chapter 37, Eradication of Desire, touches on the subject of contentment. In verse 370 it states, "It is the nature of desire never to be fulfilled, but he who utterly gives it up is eternally fulfilled at that very moment. This verse points out that it is unfulfilled desires that keep us from experiencing contentment. Let's look now at what we can do to experience the peaceful state of mind of contentment. Certainly the most basic requirement for experiencing contentment is following the yamas. Adharmic actions such as dishonesty and lying will keep our mind and emotions stirred up and prevent us from being peaceful on the inside. Not allowing ourselves to let disagreements turn into arguments is very important in nurturing contentment. Disagreements are natural, but they need to be handled in an intelligent and a harmonious way, always willing to compromise to keep the discussion from turning into an argument. One of the major causes of arguments in the home is that the home is looked at as the right place to let off steam. The husband is frustrated with his boss, but of course can't talk to his boss about it. The daughter is upset with her teacher, who she thinks unfairly picks on her and embarrasses her to her classmates. Each brings their frustrations home and takes them out on other family members. Of course, this causes frequent arguments in the home and keeps everyone in the family inwardly disturbed. Gurudeva has a very interesting statement about the home. He says that we need to consider the home a sanctuary of the entire family and never look at it as a place where we can let off steam, vent our frustrations. He continues that we need the home to have an even higher standard of professional behavior than school or the workplace. In such a home, parents interrelate in a cultured, religious way, free from disharmony and arguments. Children are respectful and all are inwardly at peace. If we cannot let off steam at home, where then can we? If we are at work or school, then before going home, you can take a walk through a beautiful place such as a park, botanical garden, or at the beach, and let the beauty quiet your mind. Another method is to stop at an exercise facility and swim, run, and bicycle away the stress. If we are at home all day, such as a housewife raising a young child, we can also become stressful. The same remedy also applies. Leave the home for a while and visit a beautiful place or an exercise facility. Getting out of the house on a regular basis for stress-reducing activities is very important. Gurudeva also suggests that certain kinds of stress can best be handled at the temple. A temple is the place where we can let our emotions pour out to the deity. Whatever we feel, we can express it to God and the gods and relieve ourselves of that burden without burdening others with it. This may result in our crying a lot, but that is an acceptable behavior at a temple. Another aspect of attaining contentment is by understanding the nature of desire. In our modern world, we are constantly encountering advertisements, many of which promise that we will be happier if we spend money and acquire what is being sold. Fancy new cars, faster computers, attractive clothes, all promise the elusive state of mind of happiness. Of course, new possessions do make us happy, but that happiness is short-lived, and we eventually end up in the same discontented state of mind we were in before we acquired the new possession. The key is to rise above this cycle of unhappy acquiring possession, happy, then unhappy again. Let me read that again. The key is to rise above this cycle of unhappy, acquiring possessions, happy, then unhappy again. Instead, hold the perspective that I am grateful for and content with what I currently have. I am acquiring something more, not because it will make me happier, but because my family will benefit in a meaningful way by having it. These two perspectives are illustrated in the statement, do you live to eat or eat to live? Do you live to eat or eat to live? Being content with what you have, however, does not mean you cannot seek to progress in life. It doesn't mean that you should not use your willpower and fulfill your plans. Rather, it means you should not become upset while you are striving toward your goals, frustrated or unhappy if you do not get what you want. Another aspect of santosha is captured in Gurudeva's statement, life is meant to be lived joyously. This attitude toward life is important in that it helps us not fall into the perspective that because we are serious about making spiritual progress and being regular in our sadhanas, we need to have a somber attitude toward life. We can be strict with ourselves but joyous at the same time. We can be, of course, if we are struggling with major difficulties in our life, this perspective may be temporarily lost. However, this statement reminds us of the need to work with ourselves to regain a joyful perspective. Gratitude is an important aspect of santosha. Gratitude is focusing on finding happiness in what we currently have rather than focusing on what we lack and anticipating happiness through acquiring something more. We are grateful for the people that comprise our family and friends, grateful for the job or school we now have, the home we live in, grateful for the wisdom and practices of our religion. We are content with our surroundings, meager or lavish, content with our income, small or large. It is striving to make a beautiful life within what one already has in life. There is a metaphysical tool that Gurudeva gives us, that gives to us in merging with Shiva, that is also helpful in experiencing contentment, which is living in the eternity of the moment. It produces the feeling that one has nothing to do, no future to work toward, and no past to rely on. This excellent spiritual practice can be performed now and again during the day by anyone. Gurudeva discovered this technique when he was 7 years old and describes the experience in detail in merging with Shiva. He was on his way home in a snowstorm from nearby Lake Tahoe and found himself worried that he would miss his favorite radio program, Captain Midnight. He saw his mind go off in the future and brought it back by telling himself, I'm all right, right now. Gurudeva suggests we practice it by asking ourselves the question, am I not all right, right now, right this instant? And answer, I'm all right, right now. Keep asking and answering until you strongly feel positive, self-assured, and fine. In conclusion, nurture contentment, seeking joy and serenity in life. Be happy, smile, and uplift others. Live in constant gratitude for your health, your friends, and your belongings. Don't complain about what you don't possess. Identify with the eternal you rather than body, mind, or emotions. Keep the mountaintop view that life is an opportunity for spiritual progress. Live in the eternal now. Om Namah Shivaya. We're continuing this morning on our series on good conduct, which, as you know, is for multiple use. It's going to the Sivakumar Saravan in Singapore for use at the Hindu center there. They're relying on him to coordinate the classes, and he finished his first 8-week series, which was on the five basic Hindu beliefs, starting with God is in all. We all know those. And he's starting up in July his second series on Lord Ganesha, and then his third series will follow, which is on the Yamas and the Niyamas. So we're ahead. He doesn't need the material yet. And we got a nice upbeat note from him this morning, and was saying that the Hindu center wants them to start classes in other parts of the city. So that's a good sign. And he was inspired also. He thought maybe as a result of this project, we could come up with a book for the parents, a simple course for the parents so that they could teach their children the same material that's being taught in the classes. So the classes are designed to be, shall we say, all denominational, not just Saivite. That's what the Hindu center requested. Can't be non-denominational, but it can be all denominational. And the series is also going to Arvind Raj and Sivaneshwaran for use with the called the Core Youth Committee. They're training some of the younger members to be teachers to the youth. So they're starting strictly a master course seminar series, drawing straight from the teaching, so that can be overtly Saivite and overtly Gurudeva. And then most recently, we have an opportunity to teach the Venkateshvara Temple in Pittsburgh. As you know, I went there, was it a year ago we went there? Went there a year ago in April or so for the seminar. They had a seminar and wanted us to come and represent Hinduism today, and we gave a talk which presented Hindu megatrends, futurist view of Hinduism. And at that time, they mentioned they'd like to have us involved in their summer camp. So a couple of weeks ago, they knocked on our door and said, can you help? And we said, what's the age group? And they said, 8 to 12. So I personally declined. But looked around and found Isan Katir to volunteer. So they're paying all his travel there. So he and his son Karti are going there toward the end of July, I believe it is. And we're going to borrow some of the material that Siva Kumar has prepared for the Hindu Center and use some of that, as well as other material we'll pull together for him. And again, give an all-denominational youth camp for children. And this is one of our efforts, is to get Gurudeva's teachings out in a broader way. And, of course, one of the main areas is the yamas and the niyamas. Gurudeva stressed that quite heavily in recent years. He would talk about building character, becoming a better person, learning how to control our instinctive nature, tendency to become angry and harmful, learning to harness the intellect from all its ramifications, subduing our sense of pride and becoming a humble person. So that's the goal of the yamas and the niyamas, is to produce those kinds of qualities in a person. So that's our introduction. Remind us of the overview. Here's the lesson for the day, Niyama 3. Today's lesson on good conduct is on the third niyama of dana, which is to be generous to a fault, giving liberally without thought of reward. Tithe, offering one-tenth of your gross income as God's money to temples, ashrams, and spiritual organizations. Approach the temple with offerings. Visit Guru with gifts in hand. Donate religious literature. Feed and give to those in need. Bestow your time and talents without seeking praise. Treat guests as God. Let's look at some examples illustrating the practice of this niyama. First example, near where a Hindu family lives, there is a Hindu temple where they worship regularly. Every time the family visits the temple, they are always sure to put a generous offering into the temple hundi. The family also regularly visits a swami at his ashram that is nearby. Each visit, they are sure to bring a cash offering, dakshina, as well as an offering of flowers and fruits. Second example, an orphanage visits certain families once a year to ask for a donation to help feed and clothe the orphans who live there. As the request is only yearly, the husband makes an especially large donation to the orphanage. Third example, a wife is very conscious of the principle that the guest is God, and when guests are in her home, always invites them to stay and join the family for the next meal. Fourth example, a Hindu society prints religious literature, which it distributes free at all the major festivals. Each piece of literature is sponsored by a different family and has their name on the back. Certain members of the society regularly sponsor these pamphlets each year as a way of spreading knowledge about the Hindu religion. All of the niyamas focus on expressing the refined soul qualities within each of us. In the case of dana, giving, the divine quality we are expressing is giving to help others without any thought of reward, such as recognition or future favors. Selfless giving effectively lessens the instinctive tendencies of selfishness, greed, avarice, and hoarding. Here's a story to further illustrate Dhamma. A devotee worshipped regularly at a temple. There were always a number of beggars outside the temple, and the man would pass them by purposefully, ignoring them. One day he felt compelled to give some money to them. He noticed that afterwards he felt uplifted by this simple act. From then on, he would always be sure to give to the beggars before entering the temple, and each time he felt the same upliftment. This joy he felt in helping the beggars inspired him to start a monthly mass feeding at the temple, which the beggars and others who live near the temple now attend. The Thirukkural in his chapter 23, Charity, echoes this perspective on the upliftment provided by giving. How unpleasant a beggar's pleading can become until one sees his face so sweetly pleased. The Kural chapter on charity describes those who do not give as hard-hearted, bitter men who waste their wealth by hoarding it, and that men of good birth graciously give. The Kural also insightfully describes a key aspect of dana, which is giving without any thought of reward. Giving to the poor is true charity. All other giving expects some return. Gurudeva also describes the upliftment of the act of giving. He insightfully states that the reward of joy and the fullness you feel is immediate as the gift passes from your two hands into the outstretched hands of the receiver. He continues by saying that the fulfillment of giving that wells up within the giver as the gift is being prepared and as the gift is being presented and released, the fulfillment of the expectancy of the receiver or the surprise of the receiver and the fullness that exists afterward are all a part of dana. Let's now look at some of the many forms of giving. In our modern world, the most common form of giving is, of course, a gift of money. We make cash gifts whenever we visit temples and ashrams. We can also make something with our hands, which is a gift, which is an in-kind gift. For example, we have a carpentry shop at home and on weekends make furniture that we donate to orphanages and homes for the elderly. A third form of giving is giving our time. We help out at the local temple by cleaning the floors and other areas once a week. Another form of giving is imparting spiritual teachings. We purchase religious literature and give it away during major festivals. A fifth form of giving is religious feedings of the masses called anayagnya, or simply yagam. We sponsor a monthly yagam at a large temple in our city, covering all the costs. Another form of giving is providing hospitality to guests. We offer them a seat and serve them a beverage and insist they stay for the next meal. The Kural in his chapter Hospitality speaks of the importance of hospitality in verse 81. The whole purpose of earning wealth and maintaining a home is to provide hospitality to guests. The Kural chapter stresses that hospitality yields success and wealth on earth as well as the joys of heaven. Let's look now at the different ways of giving. There are three common ways of religious giving: spontaneous offering, pledge, and percentage of income. Spontaneous offering is giving when visiting a swami or temple. Unless you visit the temple or swami, you do not give. A pledge is when you have made a promise to donate a fixed amount to religious or charitable organization. Pledges are usually monthly or yearly. For example, you have pledged $100 a month to a temple's building fund for a period of 2 years and fulfilled the pledge by mailing them a check each month. A percentage of income is when you have promised to donate an amount based on your income, such as 10%. This is a larger commitment and usually is done when you have made a commitment to a swami or ashram and are seriously pursuing sadhana and studying their teachings. When giving 10% of your income, the 10% that is set aside is called dasamamsha, or tithe. This part of your income is considered God's money and is not to be spent on your family needs. Therefore, a wise practice is that when you receive your monthly salary, you immediately set aside or write a check for that amount to the institution you are supporting. Some people want to tithe Some people who want to tithe start by setting aside a smaller percent, such as 5%, and gradually increase it to 10%. Quite often, giving outside the home is done by the husband. However, it is important that the wife and children also be allowed to do so. Providing the wife with funds she can give away to religion or charity allows her to experience the upliftment that comes from the practice of dana, which then brings more joy into her life. Children should be taught from a very young age dana. They can be given a small amount of money to give to the temple, to holy ones, to one another, to their parents. When older and if their parents are tithing, they can be trained to set aside as God's money 10% of any gifts they receive on their birthdays or holidays. In conclusion, be generous to a fault, giving liberally without thought of reward. Tithe, offering 1/10 of your gross income, dasamamsha, is God's money to temples, ashrams, and spiritual organizations. Approach the temple with offerings. Visit Guru with gifts in your hand. Donate religious literature. Feed and give to those in need. Bestow your time and talents without seeking praise. Treat guests as God. Om Namah Shivaya.